This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
There ain't no grave can hold my body down. There ain't no grave can hold my body down.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, thank you for joining us. This is Will. I'm here with my buddy Pete from the Titans of Wrestling podcast. He's stepping in for Johnny Sorrow, who is too inebriated to join us tonight.
So I take my tweet back about Johnny Sorrow doing the WrestleMania recap show.
Yeah, yeah. I told you the other night that he would be on here. I lied. We have my good buddy Chris Zellner, who joins me on a ton of podcasts, and of course Dylan from the Wrestling Culture podcast. So we are not short. Oh, and my buddy Johnny P could not make it either, so he's not on. But we got a great panel with us tonight, and tonight we're doing the Place to Be Nation WrestleMania recap show, and we're really excited about this because if there's anything you can say about this show is that it was a memorable show. And so we'll start off with Shu. And Shu, we're going to start off with the pre-show match, which was the tag title match. Usos versus Real Americans versus Ryback and Axel versus the Matadors. And Shu, you weren't on the prediction show, but who did you predict and what did you think about this match?
I thought it was going to be the Usos and ended up being them because you knew the Real Americans were either going to be splitting up today or Monday, but they ended up being on the show today. And, you know, it wasn't going to be Ryan Paxel because they have they're pretty much dead in the water. And the Los Matadores are not treated really, treated too highly and stuff. I loved the match. I thought it was a great way to kick off the show. It was high energy. And then you built into the big split with Swagger and Cesaro. So, I mean, everything worked well. I mean, it was a way to kick off the show and I really got the crowd was really into it, screaming, "This is awesome! This is awesome!" And for most of those guys who aren't really pushed super strong, the crowd ate up everything with a spoon.
Yeah, you know what? I agree. I think what I really like is that they, unlike most pre-show matches, they actually gave this a lot of time to develop. They didn't rush it. They didn't, try and squeeze three pinfalls in 45 seconds. And I think overall it came off really well. Even the fun big crash dive spots that these tag matches tend to have. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I agree with Pete. You know, really good match. You know, but I think the one thing about this was Ryback kind of stuck out like a sore thumb in this match to me. He was definitely not on the level of these other guys in this match. Huh. For sure. I mean, something about it, about his part in the match, just, you know, wasn't right for me. I like the Torito bump with the off the, you know, with the ropes. Well, who was it that Axel? Was it the Matadors and Axel? That was a cool little spot. Usos are really, really good. And,
When Cesaro lost, I immediately thought, okay, something's going to happen here tonight. You know, I don't know if Battle Royal or something. Something's going to happen with Cesaro.
You didn't predict
I was just thinking tonight. I was thinking, as soon as it happened tonight, I thought Swagger or somebody was going to get beat, not Cesaro. But the way they do business is, whenever somebody loses like that, something happens, like a Money in the Bank deal, you know, or they've done this before where guys have lost early in one show and they came back and won. So I knew something was going to happen. And the breakup angle, I think tomorrow night we'll get probably something with more meat on it than tonight. So with Zeb might finally get his from Cesaro. But all in all, it's fun for what it was.
Okay, now Dylan, do you agree with Chris that Ryback was the sore thumb in this match? And do you believe Chris when he says that you knew something was going to happen with Cesaro?
I disagree with him on Ryback, who I actually kind of like more than most people anyway. But I kind of do agree with him on Cesaro in the sense that, well, okay, it was a little bit weird because I did every year me and my brothers and my dad watch Mania, even though they live in Tennessee and I live here. And I actually have my best friend over watching the show with me here tonight, too. But we always make predictions ahead of time and just, you know, put a little bit of money on it or whatever. And my brother Dustin actually predicted that Cesaro would be a surprise entrant and win the Battle Royal. So I already sort of had it in the back of my mind, you know, well, maybe it's possible just because my brother Dustin had thrown it out there as sort of a bullshit statement. It wasn't so much when the end of that match happened, but as soon as I saw that he was in the Battle Royal, I turned to my friend Daniel and said he was going to win the whole thing.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's awesome.
It wasn't that necessarily after that tag match I thought that, but as soon as I saw he was in it, I was almost positive he was going to win it. As far as this match, I don't think I liked it quite as much as a lot of people. I was surprised to see the Meltzer of all people thought it an excellent match. I did enjoy it. I mean, I thought it was good. It was not quite as good as I was hoping. In the sense that once they announced it was an elimination match, I thought that they had a really good chance to have not necessarily a blow-away great match, but a very, very high-end match. And instead, they sort of still did the sort of car crash comedy-esque spots, which I don't have a real problem with. But to me, it was like two different matches. It was the first part where you sort of did everybody got their shit in, which makes sense and is understandable. And then there was a distinctive second part, which basically was the part with the Usos and the Real Americans, which was really, really good. I enjoyed it. I thought it served its role as an opener. Probably not as high on it as most people, but I did think it was a good match and a good opener. And also, we got to see Zeb make tremendous facial expressions during the Cesaro swing. So,
well, I was there live at TLC. When we had that awesome, what I thought was a match of the year candidate match, and that was the Real Americans, Ryback and Axel, Goldust and Cody, and then Show and Mysterio. So to me, this is what I'm going to compare that match to. And to me, that other match blew this one away. Having said that, I thought this was a really fun match. You know, I didn't see the problem with Ryback that Chris did. But when Cesaro lost, what I thought that was Swagger's excuse to hook on the ankle lock, right? So Swagger looks like the bad guy. He's the one who's breaking up the team. And then, as a response, you know, Cesaro, like, beats the shit out of Swagger or whatever. You know, he did. So what did he do? Did he do the big swing on Swagger?
Yeah.
He does the big swing. So that's why I thought Cesaro took the fall, was so that Swagger could initiate the face turn for Cesaro. And that's why I thought he took it. Not because of I expected him to be out. Although my wish was, if they broke up earlier in the night, Hulk Hogan calls an audible and does a match later, you know, between the two. So, but that didn't happen. But whatever, you know, we still get to see Cesaro later on. But let's move on. So, Shu, opening up the show. I know you want to talk about Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, but we're not. We're going to talk about Hulk Hogan hyping up the crowd in the Silver Dome. and The Rock. Okay. So what did you think about this opening segment? Me, personally, I called it the greatest opening segment in WrestleMania history.
Yeah, I'll second it. I thought it was just amazing. It was really cool to see all three of those guys in the ring together. You saw Meltzer's like spoiled it that The Rock was going to be there, and he was rehearsing. I don't know what the hell he was rehearsing, because you think he's a natural when it comes to being able to go and electrify.
Just those lines, man.
Still, he could have done that like in an hour and practiced that. But yeah, I think it was amazing. It was awesome that Hogan, called it the Silver Dome. And I don't know if anyone was in his ear or if he picked up on it on himself. And then I loved how everyone ribbed him on the square and stuff. And then he even made fun of it towards the end. Everything, they all clicked. And it was just like a really good moment and a way to celebrate 30 years of WrestleMania to kick it off.
What did you think there, Dylan?
Another thing I didn't like as much as other people, but I didn't hate it. I mean, like when Austin first came out, I thought it was really cool. And then I immediately knew The Rock was going to come out because, again, Meltzer sort of spoiled that he was going to be at the show. And that was sort of the obvious thing at that point. It was a cool segment. I thought it was about 5 minutes too long. As a rule, I don't like those lengthy segments of that sort. But it got over live, so it's hard to say it's too long when you know everybody really enjoyed it. To me, the fact that I have little to say about it, I think, speaks a lot about it, because it really had no relevance to the show, other than to say these three huge stars are here, and this is the 30th WrestleMania, and it's a really big moment because these three guys are here, and I think that was sort of the point of it. So, yeah, I mean, it served its purpose for what it was, but in terms of impacting the show, I mean, it's not like I'm going to go, oh, man, this was a great Mania because these three guys were in the ring and talked to each other for 15 minutes. I
thought it kicked it off great, man. Chris Z, you agree with Dylan or me and Pete, man?
It's one of those moments that, you know, it's going to be, you know, immortalized in some people's minds about this. These are the three guys that you could say were maybe the three biggest names in the company. You know, as far as like mainstream stars, you know, all together in the ring, you know, on WrestleMania 30. And yeah, I thought it was a great segment, man. Everyone's great. Hogan screwing up, I think, maybe made it better. Because
absolutely.
Oh, I agree with that. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
They had fun with it. They were able to have more fun with it. And Hogan, you know, was a great sport about it. And he even made up well for it. The same person. I'm thinking about Sam and Andre. I'm sorry. It was good off on the cuff for him. You know,
yeah, total pro when it came to covering his ass on it. I mean, it was great.
Yeah. It was a big time hit on Twitter among like the big sports media types. They were all over that, man. I saw tweets, bro. This is America right here. When they were all with their beer and stuff, and it was huge among the people that are not fans but used to be fans. It was probably one of the biggest highlights of the show for them. I mean, it was all over Twitter for like the first hour of the show.
Nice.
Those pictures. So they hit what they need to hit perfectly on that piece.
Well, I'll tell you why I liked it, Dylan. And this goes back to the other night when we did our prediction show, where we were arguing about, like, why can't Daniel Bryan be as big as these guys? You know what I mean? Why can't he be transcendent like those guys, right? And so for a night that kind of, like, is attempting to immortalize, or is that even a word? You know what I mean? To make Daniel Bryan immortal or whatever. You have the three biggest stars in company history in that ring, right? In a night when somebody like in the WWE mythology, Triple H and HBK and Undertaker, those guys should probably be in the ring too, right? Like, if you believe their countdown shows and their list of greatest wrestlers or whatever. But everybody in the know knows, hey, it's Austin, Rock, and fucking Hogan, right? I mean, no one else is even in that stratosphere. I mean, do y'all disagree with that?
I disagree, but for the company to actually go out and say, these are our three biggest stars in the history, when you have like Bruno Sammartino out there. Bret Hart had to hurt some feelings at least.
No, we're talking mainstream, brother. None of those guys were mainstream like those.
Mainstream didn't exist when Bruno Sammartino was the face of the company.
Exactly.
I mean, not in the sense that we understand it.
Yeah, realistically, at the Hall of Fame, right? Carlos Colon is the most successful wrestler out of all of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, dude, we're not going back into the fucking bingo halls, motherfucker, in the smoky rooms, you know, that never actually existed, but still.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, but if I'm Bruno Sammartino, I'd be a little offended, is what I'm.
Bruno Sammartino is happy he's not in Depends, motherfucker. Okay.
Let me tell you. You know what though? Actually, kind of building on this though. I will say this, even though I wasn't, I did, by no means did I hate the segment. I don't want to come across that way, because I absolutely.
You're coming across that way, buddy.
Well, no, I thought it was fine. It's just I wasn't laying prostrate with my mouth open and about to blow.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, it wasn't the best thing that I'd ever seen or anything. But I will say that I thought overall, because later in the show, when they showed Bruno and Harley and Dusty and everybody else, in general, I think they did a good job of sort of getting over that WrestleMania 30 of being such a big thing. Like, and as part of a bigger piece, especially, you could definitely argue that opening segment served a more significant role as the show unfolded.
And at least since the WrestleMania era, Pete, those are your three big guys, okay?
I'm not, yes. not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying my feelings might be hurt if I was Bruno or a Bret Hart or a Harley Race, even though, I mean, I agree that these are the three biggest stars in WWE history.
Well, if Ric Flair in the national era, you could have probably thrown Ric Flair out there too. But, you know, hey, if you want to hear more talk about Bruno Sammartino, join Pete, Johnny Sarr, on the rest of the game. Listen to the Titans of Wrestling podcast. We're moving on, fellas. We are moving on. All right, and now we're going to get to the opening match of the show, the proper opening match, and this is Triple H versus Daniel Bryan. Personally, I feel that this match should have gone on immediately before the triple threat, you know, so Daniel Bryan gets that one big super pop instead of, you know, the crowd kind of being used to it. But still, I thought that Triple H's entrance was amazing and how overblown it was. In fact, there were a lot of cool entrances tonight, but I thought that was amazing. I thought Daniel Bryan blew the roof off the place. And then for my money, these guys have the match of the night right here. It was almost a fuck you to CM Punk. Hey, look, I could still go, you know. That was Triple H. And then Daniel Bryan, he's pretty much gold with anybody you put him in the ring with. Dylan, I know that, you know, you love Triple H more than almost anybody on earth. And so I'm going to let you take this match first, brother.
It was a great match. I mean, it wasn't really surprising that it was a great match. I think we talked about that the other day on the prediction show. I think we all sort of thought it would be, at minimum, very good.
Right.
You knew it was going to get a lot of time, and it did. I think it got like 26 minutes. You knew that they were going to sort of play up some sort of body part injury angle because they've already established it, and they did, you know.
To perfect.
Which is something that you know, and that's something that me and you especially, Will, are big marks for. Yep. But I thought my biggest problem with the matches, with that match in particular, was, like you, I feel like it should have been right before the triple threat. It was kind of a weird thing for me to watch because as this was the match where the stream probably affected me the most.
Ooh.
Because right toward the I had some other stream problems during the show, and it very well could have been my internet connection. You know, it very well could have been my internet connection. At the very, very end of the match, I lost. Like, I didn't see the pedigree spot live.
Oh, wow.
I didn't see it at all.
Okay.
So, even though I pretty much knew what was coming when he was setting up in the corner for that knee, I knew we hadn't seen the pedigree yet, so I knew what we were about to see. I didn't see that sequence. So, I didn't get that big, oh, he kicked out of, even though it was pretty obvious he was going to kick out of at least one pedigree because it's WrestleMania, I didn't get that sort of initial, oh, shit, he kicked out of the pedigree moment. Having said that, you know, I mean, it was a really good match. It was a great match. I thought Triple H doing things like Fujiwara armbar takedowns and tiger suplexes was a extremely novel and interesting. And let's be honest, he's not going to do that against anybody other than Daniel Bryan. That's as much a tribute to Bryan as it is Triple H working hard. But he does deserve credit for working hard.
Sure.
I think the biggest thing that stood out in this match more than really anything was how awesome Stephanie McMahon was at ringside.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought she added a ton to this match. Not that it would have been, if she had not been there, it would have still been great. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of sort of elevating the dramatic moments and like getting in little digs and, you know, being a good heel manager, for lack of a better term to describe her, I thought she was excellent.
Yeah, it's even yelling at Bryan, you're a B-plus player.
Yeah.
Or telling Hunter, you can do it, baby.
Baby.
Yeah, great. What about you, Chris? What did you think?
I thought it was as good a Triple H match as we've had in a while.
Easily 14 years. I can't think of a better one he's had in 14 years.
And a lot of credit is to how he has kind of transformed his physique lately. He's lost a lot of his mass. He's got more cut. So he's, you know, it's kind of changed up. I got to make his cardio has gotten better. So he didn't look like he was more as winded tonight as he has looked over the past few years. He was very giving to Bryan and I. And that shows the difference between Triple H, the guy that runs the show, more than Triple H, the guy that's your top wrestler, because he knows that he has to get these guys over if he's working against them. So he has to go out there and do stuff, which he would have never done 10 years ago. So another credit to him on that. Stephanie was fantastic. She probably did the best job that a female heel manager has done in a long time tonight, where she was at ringside with her facials, with her, you know, her little taunts and everything. She was great tonight. And Brian was fantastic. He knew that he was going to come through tonight because this was his night, and he brought it to Triple H, you know, and the selling was great. The placement of the match, as soon as I saw it was going on first on Twitter, I was like, okay, I know what they're going to do. They're going to have him getting his shoulder destroyed here again, yep, and sell it throughout the show for some, you know, in a skit or whatever, and then he'll come out for the main event still banged up. And that's, you know, I think that makes sense, other than having the two matches back to back. You know, let it build throughout the show, that, you know, get that doubt going.
Well, let me tell you why I disagree, Chris, just for real quick, is that even though it was unintentional and wasn't planned, one of the things that they've been really great about is having Daniel Bryan run the gauntlet all year. You know, whether it was Cesaro, Swagger, and Ryback last year in Austin, or then he had to do it against the Wyatts. So it's not like Daniel Bryan can't go 45, 50 minutes straight. You know what I mean? So that's why I thought it wouldn't have affected the story at all to have his arm destroyed. In fact, if you take the ending or the post-match where Triple H slams the arm, well, now you have Bryan in the ring selling the arm while fucking Randy Orton is coming out and Batista's coming out. And then you kind of have Triple H nod to those guys, you know, or whatever. And to me, I think it would have worked just as well there without the, you know, the whole shadow being cast, you know, till the end of the night. I don't know. That's just me. What do you think, Pete? Where do you think it should go?
I'm going to put it next to the last two. Because I actually thought after the three superstars in the ring and then this match, it almost felt like the crowd was almost burnt up. Because, I mean, after Daniel Bryan gets the Triple H, you know he's going to win the title at this point, pretty much. But, I mean, that's not what doesn't matter. It didn't happen that way. But it was a great opener. The difference between, and this is like you guys were talking about, this might be one of Triple H's greatest matches. Because he actually worked a match for a change, as opposed to being in the main event where he has the smoke and mirrors with the sledgehammer and on the table spots. And he still had a table spot, but it was a lot more. He worked the matches as opposed to in the main event. It was like a spectacle, which is the difference between wrestling and sports entertainment to me. Like, the main event was sports entertainment, while this match was like wrestling, where they're working the body part, you know. Telling a story, you see Brian do a little homage to Billy Robinson, breaking out some, you know, some of that. Stephanie was like a classier version of Sherry. I love the spot where at the beginning of the match where her and Hunter do the Eskimo kissing with the noses.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
Just gets even more heat.
Hey, that's,
I hate you guys.
When they were doing that Eskimo kiss, man, that was that brief moment where I thought, 18 seconds, holy shit, they're going to be 18 seconds.
Right?
But then Triple H and Steph kind of put their faces together and say, hey, we're not as stupid as you, motherfucker.
Exactly. This is a great little thing.
But just for that brief moment, man, I thought 18 seconds, it's gonna happen.
Your record, but I really enjoyed this opener because it was just well worked. It worked like an old school, just with more modern moves type of thing to it. Really, really strong opener.
Yeah, I don't want to jump to the next match. I want to give my thoughts, but I also want to talk to Dylan about this. Dylan, one of the things that I thought, and Pete brought up, you know, wrestling versus sports entertainment. It really sucks that Triple H has been with this company for almost 20 years. And this is the first match where I felt he really was working a match kind of the way his heroes would have worked this match versus trying to pretend to be a main event player or have this ideal in his head what a main event match should be. Whereas if he would have worked all of those matches previously against your Jerichos, your RVDs, whoever, your Booker T's, Rocks, whatever, that we would probably see Triple H in a much better light than we do now. What do you think, Dylan?
That may be true. You know, I mean, I think we've seen flashes of this Triple H before. I mean, if you look at the Iron Man match with The Rock, for example, in 2000, he did a lot of interesting, different stuff for him in that match, stuff you weren't necessarily expecting. Now, in many ways, it was protected by the same sort of overbooking and, you know, extra stuff going on that Pete mentioned. But it's not like we've never seen Triple H deviate in a way that's more favorable to traditional wrestling ethos or whatever the hell bullshit term you want to use.
But he rarely actually executes it well. That's the problem. And this one, well.
I think this was probably the best Triple H performance you are likely to see, in the sense that he did not rely on the gimmicks as much. He did do some things that were different without feeling, you know, so far different that they were absurd. He was giving. And also, you know, while the match was long, it was a match that should have been long. You know, the biggest criticism I have of Triple H, more than anything else, is there's so many of his matches that are needlessly long. This was a match that was long and it should have been long. So, it was a very good Triple H performance. You know, as much as I don't like the guy, you're not going to see me say that he didn't show up, because he absolutely did. And I don't think we should be that surprised by it either, you know, because I think they knew what they had to do in that match. I mean, there was no great mystery there. And also, you know, in hindsight, I think we probably should have known the matches were not going to be back to back, because they sort of teased that Randy Orton's entrance music was going to be live earlier.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I just thought,
you know, there's no way they were going to do that. And then, you know, now, and I think Chris might have said this. Somebody said this on Twitter, and it might have been Chris. There was no way that Triple H was going to come out after Taker lost. It'd be the guy's message.
That wasn't me. But yeah, that's definitely right. That, yeah, there was no way in hell they were going to do that after Taker lost.
Oh, man.
No,
yeah.
Okay.
That was not going to happen.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing I really liked about this, in terms of what I mean not being a Triple H match, is when Triple H was in control, he's working the arm, you know, he does like the great hammerlock onto the edge of the apron, which, you know, is just one of my favorite markout spots. I marked out when Brutus Beefcake did that shit to the Bulldogs at WrestleMania too, okay? Still love that spot. I don't understand why people don't use that, you know, or, you know, like George Animal Steel had the hanging hammerlock, right? Or the chicken wing, whatever. I don't know what it's fucking called. Whatever. But
it was Anderson too. It was like a Holy Anderson type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I love that fucking spot. It needs to come back in a big way. But, you know, I really, what I liked about Triple H in this match was the timing of his comebacks. He let Brian get those comebacks where you think Brian's going to reel off spot after spot. Then all of a sudden, boom, clothesline ends the, you know, the kicks in the corner. Then Brian comes off for the headbutt. And Triple H doesn't lift both knees. He lifts one knee because, you know,
That was a great spot. That's what Triple H does.
He uses that one knee offense, right? So, you know, but, I mean, I don't know, man. Easily for me, match of the night, no question. On par with the best WWE matches this year, for my money, man. I really, really enjoyed this match, and I'm like you, Dylan. I don't give Triple H a lot of easy praise. You know, if Daniel Bryan has a so-so performance, I'm going to forgive it. You know, we've talked about Punk. I'm going to forgive a Punk performance or a Mark Henry awkward performance like that one against Ryback last year, but I am not going to forgive Triple H or go easy on him. So, you know, for me to praise him this much, he really left a strong impression on me. So let's move on to the next match, and I know that our buddy Johnny Sorrow is really sad about this, because his beloved New Age Outlaws and Kane got squashed like the bug, like I predicted. It should have been no longer than 4 minutes. The match went, what, 2 minutes, 3 minutes tops, right?
How long? All action, 3 minutes. Yeah,
this one went right under 3 minutes. It's exactly what it should have been. The Shield hit their big spots. The other guys look like a bunch of old jobbers, and they were. Shield come in, hit all the big, the super double, quadruple power bomb at the end.
Awesome.
You know, Shield win. The only thing that hurt the Shield is that they got to follow that Bryan, Daniel Bryan match. You know, I think they would have gotten a much bigger pop if they didn't follow Daniel Bryan. And so I think that hurt it a little bit. Having said that, they're going to sell a ton of those skull masks. That's all I got to say about this. What do you got to say about this, Chris?
I agree about the mask, totally. I thought that was a great look. I think this match probably got some time cut, probably from the opening segment.
I think it was designed
this match deserved a time cut. You know, it didn't need to be long. I kind of was surprised it was such a murderous squash. I thought maybe we might get some type of offense from Kane or something. But it worked out fine. You know, it's perfect for the Shield to look like complete, you know, badasses. And now they can go into their next angle, whatever it is, you know, with some big momentum.
All right. What about you, Pete? What do you got?
Yeah, it was what it was. The Shield looked fantastic. Each one had a chance to shine, even though it was like only 3 minutes. And those guys deserve to get squashed. I mean, I don't want to see the New Age Outlaws on like television anytime soon. Same with Kane. So I'm glad. And the Shield, yeah, they're going to sell a shitload of masks. I was hoping for an angle with them tonight, trying to elevate them a little more. But we'll see it probably tomorrow.
Yeah, hopefully they're power bombed to hell right now. So, Dylan, any thoughts on this?
This match was okay. Here's the good. The good was this match was exactly what it should have been, and it was exactly not what I thought feared it might be. The other good is that I think this pretty much guarantees that the Shield are going to be around for a while, and they're going to get another really big push. The negative is, why did this match happen? To me, the fact that it was such a squash reinforces even more how stupid it was to even book it in the first place. Like, yes, it was the right thing to do to have it be a squash once the match was booked, but it never should have happened. You know, like, and that was kind of my takeaway was, okay, they at least did the right thing in the awful position they put themselves in. It's just I feel bad for the Shield in a way because they've been such a big part of the WWE for the last 18 months. In both their Mania matches, it felt really uneventful. And you know, you kind of want them to get that big Mania match, and I don't know if they're even going to be around together as a unit by Mania next year. So
I agree with that. And, you know, as we'll talk about with the John Cena Bray Wyatt match, looking back, we really, really should have had that Shield Wyatt's 3 match here.
Yep.
Maybe with the TLC gimmick or, you know, just something. Just to like kind of end that feud, this really should have built up Wyatt's versus Shield only because of the result of that John Cena match. But before we talk about that match, we got one more match, and that was the Battle Royal.
The Shield real quick.
Oh, I'm so sorry, man. Did I forget you?
No, you gave me it. I just want to mention something about, you know, we talked about the breakup of the Shield. I think actually probably the breakup probably starts with Money in the Bank, where one of them costs the other one the chance to get the briefcase, and I think that's where it starts.
You know what, Chris? That's a great point. And what do you guys think about this? Money in the Bank, you know, if I guess they're only going to have one of them, but fuck it. All three members of the Wyatts, all three members of the Shield.
That'd be great.
And that's
never going to happen. But
you know what?
That would be awesome.
Yeah, to me, that's your Money in the Bank, and maybe even throw in the broken up Real Americans where Swagger and Cesaro can fight for Uncle Zeb's affections or something. You know, you put those eight guys in the match, I'm there, I'm sold, I'm watching Money in the Bank, you know. But, okay, yeah, so it's not going to happen. Whatever. I still want it to happen. All right, let's move on. Battle Royal. Now, on the prediction show, when we had our good buddies Johnny Sorrow and Johnny P on, nobody predicted Cesaro. Dylan's clairvoyant brother, Devin, he predicted Cesaro because he saw it in a dream. It was his vision. Just real quick story. On Friday night, this is 2 days before Mania, by the way, I had a dream that I kept falling asleep through the Mania show. And every time I woke up, I would hear the results of a match, but I would never get to see the match. And I'd keep falling asleep before the next match. And I woke up to Yes Chance. And then I really woke up to a screaming baby, but that's neither here nor there. Having said that, Dylan's brother, Devin, legitimately had a dream where Cesaro was in the Battle Royal and won the Battle Royal. Am I saying that right, Dylan? I don't want to misquote your brother.
I think Dustin is the one who predicted today Cesaro
Dustin.
Was going to win.
Okay.
What Devin dreamed, because he told me about this, Devin dreamed that Brock was going to be picked. Devin told me he had a dream where Brock beat Taker, and he did tell me this a couple days ago. This was not something that he said after the fact. But I'll get to that because
That's even a stronger clairvoyant dream. You know that makes his powers of clairvoyancy even more amazing, having picked that match. Because all of us the other night were concerned about the quality of the match, not the actual match result. And we're jumping ahead. So in this match, the only two guys to get music were Sheamus and Big Show. There's no Rusev, so he had no shot at it. And so I'm thinking, okay, Sheamus and Big Show will be the last two in. And I even made comments that once Mark Henry was out, fuck this show, I'm out. I'm tapping out. Because to me, this would have been the greatest time in the world to rehabilitate Mark Henry as the first challenger for Daniel Bryan. But whatever.
He did eliminate 3MB. All by himself.
Yeah, he did.
Then went out like a little bitch, so whatever. I think Kofi Kingston eliminated him or someone weak like that, you know. But whatever.
The Big Show did.
Whatever. Kofi Show, same shit. Anyway.
The non-winner.
Yeah, the non-winner. You know, when like Cesaro lifted him up and threw him out like in a
box. Exactly.
You know, because that would have been Dylan. You know, that's a wet dream match: Cesaro versus Mark Henry, like Wall of Fame Mark Henry, right? Wouldn't that be amazing? Anyway, so Dylan, we'll start with you, man. Thoughts on the Battle Royal?
Well, I mean, anybody who's followed my ranting over the last year knows that Cesaro. I think Cesaro has been the best guy in the world for over a year. And so, you know, when I saw that he was in there, as I mentioned earlier, I literally turned to my buddy Daniel, who I was watching the show with, and said he's going to win it. Because there was really no other reason to put him in the match other than to have him win. You know, he'd already been on the show. There would have been no purpose for him to even be in the match otherwise.
Yeah.
You know,
that they wanted to set up like an elaborately contrived spot where they needed his strength on top of like...
Which actually turned out to be the case.
Like, wouldn't it have been amazing? Wouldn't it have been amazing if you have like Mark Henry going to the top, Big Show doing the superplex, with Cesaro doing the powerbomb spot that they did in the Divas match, but with those three guys and with Cesaro on bottom holding Big Show and Mark Henry up? Holy shit! Wouldn't that have been amazing? That's the only reason I thought he was in there. Go.
Then we would have had our first WrestleMania ring breaking.
Yeah. Our first WrestleMania fatality. As a Battle Royal, you know, I mean, we talked about this on the last show. I was really disappointed that this even existed. I thought it was a really lazy way to book. But if you're going to book something lazy, you know, in the sense of not giving guys opportunities to have matches where they can stand out more, at least in the end, they ultimately put over the guy who needed it and deserved it the most. As a match, you know, it was a Battle Royal. I thought the end part of it was a lot of fun. You know, there was a lot of fun eliminations. Some amusing and interesting exchanges and bumps. I really liked the Miz's exit. Tina's Cobra.
Yeah.
I thought that was a great bump. But
I loved Fandango's exit too. I thought that was great.
Yeah, Fandango's was real good. The Kofi spot was completely ridiculous but entertaining. You know, I mean there was a lot of stuff like that in there. It wasn't great. It wasn't outstanding. Battle Royals never are. But the key is that the finish and the moment at the end, you know, with Cesaro picking up Big Show like he was nothing.
Yes.
Taking a couple steps with him and then throwing him over the top. I mean, you know, that was a real WrestleMania moment, not some bullshit thing. I mean, that's something people will remember and talk about. And I think it speaks volumes about Cesaro, and I've made this point before at other times, but I'll make it again here. It speaks volumes about Cesaro that with he, him and Daniel Bryan are the only guys that do this, where they have him work double duty all the time, you know. And here he is again, you know, and yeah, it's not the same thing as Daniel Bryan, but he's working double duty on the show again, and he's put over strong. So it looks to me like they really have a lot of faith in him.
I think you're right. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, it was a battle royal. I liked that the pregame show where Jimmy Hart predicted Ryback as his winner of the battle royal, even though he wasn't in it. So that was awesome.
Oh, hey, Chris, I want to make sure you get this in. Tell the people out there what Jimmy Hart was wearing in the pre-show.
Jimmy Hart was wearing the exact same jacket that his LJN figure had on, the white coat with a red heart. It was straight out of 1985.
Yeah, LGN model Jimmy Hart. Okay.
And Danny Davis was there. So.
And
Danny Davis.
How awesome.
With sleeve tattoo.
It's so awesome, man.
I like how Sarge and Slaughter actually had to say, "Hey, dangerous Danny Davis," to make sure everyone in the audience knew who he was.
Pete, anything else to say about the Battle Royal before
he got Cesaro over? So it was what it was. I don't think it's the career maker that the publicity machine was making about the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I think it would have been cooler if they showed a little bit more Timmy White, like if he got to hand over the trophy or something, since he was Andre's handler for so long. You know, they showed little pieces of him stuff.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? What did you think?
I thought it was the big moment that made Cesaro. I mean, a lot of people that had never seen Cesaro before, you know, I follow on Twitter, or, you know, don't really pay attention to him. They were very impressed with him, you know, that feat of strength slamming show, which you got to give show a lot of credit for taking that spot on the reins of the floor like that at his size. You know, that's not an easy task. So, credit to him. Kofi Kingston is amazing to me when he does these spots that he's never messed up one time. He's done these spots and Royal Rumbles and other Battle Royals, and he's never botched it. And tonight it could have been a bad one because he went flying high in the air and he landed hard on his back. You know, he could have, but he kept those feet right there in them steps. And yeah, that guy is something else.
that was a pretty great spot.
I thought it was fun how, you know, I'd say a good 8 guys in that Battle Royal were not announced. You know, they were. There were guys that they had announced that weren't in there.
Like who?
Bad News Barrett wasn't in there. Christian wasn't in there. Who else wasn't in there?
Was Sin Cara in there? I don't think he was.
Yeah, he was doing his story at work spots.
Yeah, and wearing Mystico colors, too, by the way, which I thought was a good rip. But, there was quite a few people that weren't that were announced that weren't in there. And no Rusev. No Alexander Rusev. So we saw the return of, Justin Gabriel was in there.
Yoshitatsu.
Gabriel was announced, though. Gabriel was announced. He was one of the guys listed on the site, I think.
Well, some people thought that Tyson Kidd was Evan Bourne, which I thought was cute. But, it was fine. You know, it was better than some of the battle royals they've had recently. So, I liked it.
Well, here's but my take.
Do you see in 3 months, though, them mentioning that Cesaro won this battle royal? That was more what I was getting at. It was a big moment at the time, but I don't think they're going to push it.
Well, no, hold on, Shu. Yeah. I'm going to disagree with you there, because really? I think that they invested so much time of saying this is going to be the first of an annual event, that this is a big deal. I think that they will mention it the same way they mentioned, like, he's the Money in the Bank winner, or in the past, Owen Hart was the Slammy Awards winner. I think it'll be big in that sense.
I disagree. I think it'll just be mentioned around WrestleMania because it's a way to get all these guys on the show for a payoff.
No, that trophy's going to be on TV every week.
All right, we'll see.
At least till tomorrow when Jack Swagger destroys it. So,
there's no way he's destroying that bad boy.
But having said that, I thought this was actually the tell of two matches. The first 5 minutes or so was your typical battle royal, let's just toss the jobbers out, okay? And then your second half was when you're down to that like last 8 to 10 guys that they actually give a shit about. You know what I mean? Or that they're showing proper respect to let them do spots, do hope spots where they don't, you know, where they stay in, where they do these big contrived choreographed spots, which I love, by the way. I'm not even knocking them. I'm just not I don't have another way of describing them.
Yeah, the European uppercuts just are throwing out like the Ziggler. Right. And I mean,
but even awesome.
Yeah, that was some sick stuff.
Like guys like Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio and
but Del Rio was fun. He was really good tonight.
Well, hold on. These are the guys though that are there at the end. You know, your Rhodes brothers that they actually gave some time to let them tell like little mini stories in the ring once all your Santinos and Santino actually got Miz out. But your Darren Youngs, like those guys, and your Brad Maddoxes. Once you throw all those guys out, let's give these other guys that we might have merchandise with or that we're actually going to like push on the undercard later.
Yeah, they all had their like little moments and stuff. You're absolutely right.
That's why it was so heartbreaking that Mark Henry went out the way he did, was because I thought Mark Henry should have been kind of one of like the last four or six guys in there, and he wasn't. So I was really bummed out about that. Having said that, I thought that something that I was probably going to take a piss break for ended up being a match that I enjoyed. Like, so at this point in time, through the Battle Royal, from the kickoff match, Brian Triple H, the Stone Cold Rock Hogan, Shield Squash, and this match, through this point, I'm loving this WrestleMania. At this point in time, at the end of this Battle Royal, with Cesaro being a pleasant surprise winner, I'm saying, holy shit, this WrestleMania cannot miss. And then we get to the next match. John Cena versus Bray Wyatt. And we're going to let you kick this one off. Thoughts on John Cena versus Bray Wyatt?
The wrong guy went over. I was utterly confused on what they were trying to do. There was like, I liked parts of the match, but this is a match I really had high hopes for, where I thought we were going to have a pretty kick-ass match from those guys. And it just, the psychological mind game stuff really kind of detracted to me from an action-packed match.
Well, you know, I know me, Dylan, and Chris, I think we all predicted this would be match of the night, right?
Yeah.
Chris?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, continue, Shu.
Yeah, I thought it was definitely show-stealing material, and I just thought it was pretty dull and boring and really didn't engage me. And it was just like, I like Cena as a big show worker. I think I said on that one show, if you will, that I thought Bray Wyatt has like future Undertaker potential as a character, as in being that type of guy around for the company for years, because I think he has character, has a lot of legs and stuff where he can be heelish or become a super face in a year or two when the time's right. And just the match just missed for me. It just didn't resonate. Well, and I really don't know why. I think a lot of it was the psychological stuff, and then the outside, the smoke and mirror part, and then there was a lot of lying around and Cena like becoming violent but then pulling back, which I guess that was the story of the match. But yeah, it just missed the mark.
Yeah, what did you think, Chris?
Yeah, I love the psychology. I thought that was the best part of the match. I love Bray Wyatt's character. I mean, that's like some, you know, it's like Jake Roberts level shit going on in that way he was acting in that match tonight. I think one thing this did prove is that he's not ready as a worker for that type of match yet.
Huh.
Character wise, yes. Worker wise, this is John Cena. You know, Cena is the premier big match worker. And, you know, Dylan says that, I say that. He is the man. If you can't go out there and have, you know, a big match style with him, I don't know. There's something wrong.
Well, to me, hold on.
The entrance was great. I love the entrance. The entrance was fantastic.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. I really liked the referee yelling at John when he had the chair. John, this is not you. You don't do this. You know, when Bray was demanding him, he would hit him with a chair. I thought that was fantastic.
Like John Cena's never hit a guy with the chair before.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's so uncharacteristic.
Yeah, the finish was anticlimactic in a way, and Wyatt, he's just not ready yet.
I think I disagree with you. I don't believe that it was Wyatt's fault that this match fell apart, because as we saw with a well-built Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt.
Daniel Bryan is different. And it wasn't, you know, that was a match on the Royal Rumble as a middle match. This is John Cena at WrestleMania. You've got to step your game up.
Well, you know what? John Cena and The Rock didn't exactly step their game up last year then, did they?
The Rock's terrible. Let's close. Please stop it. Just please stop with The Rock. I'm so sick of anybody ever talking about him. He fucking sucks. God.
Yeah.
But my point is that, okay, my point is John Cena is a great big match worker, okay? But at the same time, the guy has kind of lost the step. He's hit or miss at this point, where he used to be kind of like, you put him in there with somebody, he's going to fucking go. Whereas Daniel Bryan is one of those guys where he has Triple H's best match in 15 fucking years. You know what I mean? I had no hope for Triple H being in a good match.
And made you like watching Kane matches for two
years
on television.
Yes. You know, so what I'm trying to argue is that like John Cena is just as hit or miss in the last year or so as anyone else. But, you know, I'm not going to blame this match on Bray Wyatt. Dylan, what do you think, man?
Well, on that point, real quick, I would say that I do think, generally speaking, that Bryan is a more consistent performer than John Cena at this point. Having said that, there were Daniel Bryan does something that John Cena typically doesn't do, which annoys the fuck out of me. And it's one of the reasons that the Daniel Bryan is the greatest wrestler ever lived fetishism drives me so insane. And that is because he's a extremely formulaic wrestler at this point. And I have no problem with that as a guy who likes formula, but he's never criticized on those grounds. because he's the last consensus guy, the last guy that everybody likes, regardless of what their position is on wrestling, generally speaking, people are very timid about making any critical statements of him. But when he goes out and plugs Dean Ambrose into his formula match and has a middling match with him, well, it's Dean Ambrose's fault. Nah, that's fucking bullshit. Anyway, moving on to this match. Cena and Bray Wyatt, I actually liked it way more than anybody else on the panel. I think from the reactions on Twitter, and I think Chris will agree with me on this, I think this is going to go down as one of the most polarizing matches in the history of WrestleMania. There were people who absolutely loved it. There were people saying it was the best match on the show, even after the show was over. There were people saying that it was horrifically bad and the worst match on the show and a complete pile of shit. I mean, it was bizarre how huge the chasm was. You usually don't see like a gap that big, but usually when you do see a gap that big, it's on like sort of, for lack of a better term, ideological grounds. Like your more work rate, moves, spot heavy guys will be. That's not how this was.
That's a real good point, actually.
This was really a much more, polarizing match, even within the groups that tend to agree. I thought it was really good. You know, I liked everything up until the finish. I thought the finishing run was absolutely wrong, because there was no reason for Bray Wyatt to lose. There's no compelling reason for Cena to win that match.
Absolutely.
And that really bothered me, because it was like they built all this stuff and the psychology was heading in one direction, and then the match ends on a direction that doesn't really completely fit with the psychology. It ended up being sort of the same old John Cena overcomes the odds match when they were really teasing that it was going to be something different. So to me, the finish is what dragged the match down. The match itself, I actually really liked. I mean, I get that there were some people who thought Bray looked blown up at times with applying the chin locks or whatever, and that may be true to a degree, but I still think they did a lot of really good stuff in the match. I liked the psychology. I thought the build was there. The problem is that the payoff to the build did not fit what they were building.
I like that point, yeah.
You know, to me it was a good match with a bad finish, and it was in some ways it sort of reminded me of some of the Randy Orton, Daniel Bryan pay-per-view matches, where the work would be really good, and then you knew Daniel Bryan was going to get screwed over in this really stupid, shitty, unconvincing way, and that's kind of how this felt.
Well, you know what, man? I watched this match with a room full of people, which I rarely do because I just don't have that many wrestling fans that live in the same city as me. My wrestling fans, because I have so many fans. No, I don't have that many wrestling fan friends, okay, that live in the same city as I do. I don't go to shows with a group of people. You know, usually if I can find one or two guys who used to watch during the Attitude Era, tag along because it's free tickets, they'll go with me. You know, that's kind of like the reality I live in. I don't normally watch in groups. And tonight, my nephew works with some wrestling fans, so he invited me over to his house, him and his wife, and he had some friends over there. And a buddy of mine that I used to watch wrestling with back in 1998 came over. So we have this like room full of people, like 8 or 9 people. And so, Dylan, you know I trust your judgment in wrestling matches. And if you're saying this is a good match, this might be the match I have to go back and watch by myself on the computer without a room full of people expecting a high, energetic, fast-paced, exciting match with lots of ebbs and flows. And, you know, so I'm actually going to suspend my comments on the match itself until I rewatch it by myself. And then I don't disagree at all. And does anyone else disagree? The booking really hurt this. Bray Wyatt should have gone over. Pete, yes or no?
Oh, yeah. Bray should have gone over. There's no doubt. I mean, the whole entire build, the whole reason is for Cena to create a new star. I mean, he's already a star, but this is really going to be Bray's moment to beat John Cena and, you know, and then really, you know, really, really put the gas to him.
Chris, you have another theory. What's your theory?
Oh, there's no way that Cena and Undertaker are going to lose in the same show. So if Undertaker's losing, Cena's winning, even though it's the wrong finish for the match. I mean, I just believe that they were not going to have that happen. They got a heel had to win one of these matches, and it was going to be Wyatt or Lesnar. So Lesnar was the one that got the dupe. But I don't think this feud's over with yet. I expect Cena to probably get the hell beat out of him tomorrow night. So they'll probably do a rematch in Extreme Rules. And Wyatt's going to get his win. But it should have happened tonight, no doubt.
Okay. Do you agree with that, Dylan, before we move on to the next match, that the reason why it didn't go over was because Undertaker was losing?
You know what? That is basically what my buddy who I watched the show with said after the Lesnar match. And, you know, he said, well, they weren't going to have Cena and Taker lose on the same show. And there were people on Twitter and actually on other places, including people in the building who had, you know, were texting me, who were telling me that, like, kids were crying after Taker lost. So, I mean, like, imagine, you know, I mean, you get the
point. Yeah, like, I got yeah, it.
That would have been a pretty bad double whammy. So Chris is probably right.
Okay, I can see that. So let's
Yeah, that is actually a really good point.
So then at this point, though, they do the right thing, which is this is where they start introducing the Hall of Famers, right? At this point, am I wrong?
Yeah.
This is,
yeah.
So we got our Hall of Famers out. I don't want to make this a Hall of Fame show, too. Quick thoughts on the Hall of Fame and the speeches the other night. Dylan?
I enjoyed the show. I thought it was too long, but I would rather a Hall of Fame show be too long than too short, because it really sucks, you know, during that period where they were rushing everybody. And, you know, one of the reasons I did not go to the Hall of Fame when I was at WrestleMania a couple of years ago in Atlanta was because the emphasis was on this is going to be quick and efficient, and I had no interest in watching guys give 10-minute speeches, so where they felt they were under the gun. So I thought it was a good show, too long. Jake Roberts, you know, I and DDP, I thought, stole the show. I really liked Glenn Jacobs' introduction of Paul Bearer, too. I thought that was really cool because it was, you know, sort of historically grounded and not just a, you know, hey, he was here in the WWE and played a mortician forever.
Yeah, well, while you're on that, Dylan, did you listen to Meltzer's show? Because he mentioned, like, he felt Jacobs actually did research to do this bio. It wasn't, like, something he knew naturally.
Yeah, I mean, like, I actually did listen to Dave and Brian, and yeah, I think Dave's right. I felt like he really did do his homework and actually, he clearly, like, he not only did he care about, you know, introducing his friend and putting his friend in and doing all that, but he also was actually interested on the historical end, or at least he did a good job of faking it if he wasn't interested.
Yeah.
So that to me was really cool. You know, as a whole, it was a good Hall of Fame show, I thought, and you know, Warrior was Warrior, and the Jerry McDivitt line was funny, and Carlito was really funny.
The uncomfortable Ted DiBiase spot.
Yeah.
Like, hey, is Ted here? Hi, Ted. Yeah. Hi, Ted. Yeah. Like, what's he going to do? Fight you, motherfucker? Shit. Yeah. what would you think, Chris?
Oh, I thought it was a great show. I thought Lita's speech was really fun. It may have been a little long and draggy at times, but she talked about so much shit that you would never expect to hear on a WWE event. You know, having Rhino at least go Junior's mask, sitting on the podium for almost an hour was fantastic. And just some of them had to go. I love that. But the two main themes of the show to me were loving your mothers. And
no, it's treat your mother right. Get it right, Chris. Treat your mother right.
And the greatness of DDP. I mean, that was a fantastic show because Roberts was, you know, Jake was awesome, and Scott Hall was really, really good. They looked good considering, and Warrior, you know, he mentioned in his speech, I got to give me some of that DDP yoga. I like that a lot. Carlos Colon was a fun spot. You know, I thought Carlos did well.
Carlito, first checking out the Divas like he's at a...
Yeah, Carlito was full on, I know I'm not getting my job back, so I'm going to say shit, you know, basically what that was. But, yeah, the show was fun. It did drag because of Mr. T and Lita going long and stuff. And I wish, you know, Scott would have had a little bit more time on his speech.
I don't know if anybody said this. I don't think they trusted Scott Hall to have a long speech. You know, I honestly don't. I don't think that. I think that they wanted him to say what he had to say, find a spot where they could then bring the click out and do the click thing, which is what everybody wanted, and get him the fuck off the stage before he starts talking about pills and hookers. That's my... By the way.
Well, it says something that when they trust Jake Roberts over Scott Hall, I mean...
here's what I think it says. I think it says something really, I think it says something about the entire nature of the show when the most disturbing veiled reference on the show was Lita sort of subtly suggesting that she was double teamed by Arn Anderson and Rey Mysterio.
Yeah. Like,
for a can of beer, right?
I mean, as that story was going on, I was like, oh man, what is the conclusion to this going to be? This could be bad.
And you see Mysterio in the audience go, this is a great story. Yeah, of course, because he got laid.
That's awesome, man.
And Warrior looking like Mini Kevin Nash was a fun little sub story to the show.
I didn't even think that you're...
No. Hold on. The best part of the show, guys, we have to mention this. I know we don't want to spend too much time on Hall of Fame, but Linda McMahon depicting the Ultimate Warrior as a hyper-sexualized lunatic was... Yeah. That was the weirdest introduction, like, in terms of, like, a guy, like, or a woman in this case, I guess, introducing and you know, being the inductor. That was the weirdest speech of its kind I think I've ever seen, because it literally was like an old lady reading excerpts of 50 Shades of Grey. I mean, it was one of the creepiest things I've ever seen. Oh, God, it was disturbing. I thought I made this joke on Twitter, but I thought she was going to start talking about the Ultimate Warrior's position on crushed leaves if it had gone on much longer.
And we had the appearance of The Undertaker, probably the only time he'll ever be on the Hall of Fame ceremony until he's actually inducted. In full character.
Which will be next year.
Yeah, in full character, you know, doing the tribute to Paul Bearer. And, you know, that was a nice touch. And Kane, God bless Kane. They send Kane out there to get Mr. T, and he had this look on his face like, I really don't want to do this.
Okay,
but
okay.
You gotta got saved.
You guys got to save some meat for Shu, man. He's gonna be picking at bones. Y'all are hitting all the high spots.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I went long. I'm with Dylan and Chris. I'd rather go long than, like, when my man, like, I'm a big Steamboat fan. He's my favorite wrestler of all time. When they gave him, like, 3 minutes, it was, like, the most depressing thing. had ever seen, because you wanted to see like at least a 20-minute speech.
Yeah, the biggest tragedy was what they did with the Funks.
Yeah, 2 minutes each or whatever it is. Yeah, you know, that's just, why have a Hall of Fame speech if you're just going to do that? You might as well just send the plaque or the ring in the mail and stuff. I loved Jake DDP were definitely the highlights, and you know, Jake's speech was just like how he wrestled. You know, he took you on an emotional ride, and it was great. I got some flack on the board because I thought the Warrior couldn't follow T as in craziness, and I ended up having to talk to some guy on the board for something like, how dare you think a Warrior is going to be crazy on some agenda? It's like, well, he's the Warrior, man. He's called the Warrior and stuff. But overall, man.
Hey, Shu, Pete.
Yeah.
And how great is it that Linda McMahon's trying to put this guy over, but then mentions that his name is Warrior, not Warrior Hellwig, not Jim Warrior, but Warrior. That's how dedicated he is. Like, what the fuck? That's batshit crazy, lady.
Yeah,
that's not dedication.
That's not dedication. That's like sending each of you.
Your daughter's
hospital.
Last name is Warrior. What the fuck are you doing to those kids?
It's like saying Stephanie's going to legally change her name to Triple H or something. Triple H's wife. Yeah, but overall, I thought it was really great, and I thought I was really proud of the fans for the most part because I thought they did a really good job.
I got to mention this because I think people are complete. I think people are treating Mr. T's speech like a joke. I think he was sincere throughout all of it. When he did the Independence Day holiday, that is straight up Southern Baptist preaching right there. That is comedy.
He was honest. He was honest, but he was still batshit crazy. I mean,
speaking of
Warrior, his son is Little T. I mean, what?
but he's got his master degree. Okay.
Yeah. And again, I was happy that, I mean, it was cool that he did all that stuff. And I mean, I liked the speech. I mean, it cracked me up. But I didn't think it was this. I don't think it was appropriate for the wrestling Hall of Fame.
I you know what though? I don't think Mr. T has ever seen a Hall of Fame.
True.
Okay. I think that Mr. T thought, this is them honoring me, and I'm going to talk about the things that are important to me, which is my family. And he did it. And what I love about that speech is that he starts off the speech, because, you know, at this point in time, you know, people are going to heckle him. He's going to get the cat calls, whatever. Let me talk for a couple of minutes. He said a couple of minutes, just a couple of minutes about my mother, and proceeds to talk about his mother for 45 fucking minutes.
He doesn't know the wrestling cat call, so the whole what thing.
No.
He doesn't know what that was. Austin was laughing his ass off.
Hey, me and my buddy were watching that live as my daughter and her 15 friends were having a slumber party and doing the karaoke to, Call Me Maybe or whatever. Okay. So I was outside with my buddy and we were watching it on my cell phone, right? And Mr. T, and we're cracking up at this speech, right? We're just like, holy shit, what the fuck is he doing? You know? And then we're talking, we're like, Mr. T knows exactly what he's doing, because the two things he invokes are his mother and God, and you can't heal on God or the mother unless you're fucking Vince McMahon, okay? And you can't. So I'm trying to watch this in the middle of, trying to monitor a slumber party and karaoke night. And I'm looking at this, and I'm like, dude, this is a tribute to his mother. And these people think he's joking. He is sincere. And my buddy pulls out his cell phone. This is the great thing about modern technology. He's like, dude, he's doing his song. And I'm like, what song are you talking about? Now it's all over the internet. It's no big surprise. And he shows me the Treat Your Mother Right song. And I'm like, he just said that in his speech. He's quoting his song, you know. And we couldn't believe that Mr. T did a 30-minute speech, 40-minute speech, however long it went, based on his mother rap, you know.
Now, the one thing he did joke about was the Father's Day, because he even cracked up on the Father's Day reference.
But then Kane coming out, you know, saying, I need the time to talk about my daddy.
Yeah.
I thought, for me.
Yeah, that was good. Well, anyway, I'm going to give that Hall of Fame a big thumbs up. And we're going to take some time out to do some place to be advertising here. And we'll be right back to talk about the home stretch run of this year's WrestleMania 30. You're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, we'll be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling. Oh.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show. I break down matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point, here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place Simulation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Hey there, Nation. This show's going pretty long, so what we're going to do here is break this into two parts for you. If you're on PlaceToBeNation.com, you can go ahead and click the link right in this very post. If you're listening on iTunes, Part 2 will start right now.